Hi guys, it's Jay from T&M Ball, and I've got my co-host today, Mr. Suv. However, we did start the podcast for a bit prior to this, but there was a bit of audio issues, so I had to edit out for a change. I hope you enjoyed the show, and again, I know it's been a while, but apologies for that. We will be uploading a lot more, but I hope you enjoy it. The first question is in regard of course, everyone's favourite topic at the moment, Newcastle United, and me just asking Suv. So, yeah, enjoy the podcast. And so, people in regard of like Blackburn owners now, they don't even need it, do we? You know, you've got to be essentially a company or a country now to own the club, wouldn't you say?
Well, yeah, or some kind of consortium of mega rich people.
Yeah.
Or the consortium of, you know, part business, part state ownership.
I mean, we even talk about, say, the Leicesters, you know, being up and coming, but I mean, how much are they worth, them guys? You know, I bet they're even hundreds of millions of pounds, aren't they?
I don't know about their sort of business wealth, but the fact that they announced plans yesterday to expand the stadium and add, I think it's another 8,000 seats in the stadium, building a new hotel, leisure complex, blah, blah, blah. You know, all in and around the stadium area. Huge investment again into the local city where they're based. So they're one of the better owners. Because it's not just about the football club. And again, it brings its own rewards for them, doesn't it? Have they got a lot of money? Yes. Have they put a lot of money into it since they bought it? Yes. And has it generated them a lot of money? Yes. Because they've got everything pretty much right on and off the field.
Well, the scouting's phenomenal. But going back to Newcastle, I mean, well, that's a hard question straight away. Do you think it's sports washing? Do you think this should be allowed to be taken over?
Well, it is sports washing. And whether they should be allowed to take over or not is a bigger question in a bigger debate that isn't just about football. I mean, that's a wider moral issue. Is it right that the same Saudi PIF can come and snap up property in London, businesses in Britain, but nobody talks about that? But apparently, because it's a football club,
yeah.
So I'm not saying one way or the other. What I'm saying is, you know, it needs to be a wider debate about the involvement of Saudi Arabia in any form of business, not just in a football club. Why is it okay to buy, you know, a Mayfair property as an investment, but not Newcastle United?
Well, do you know what? We'll switch it on the other way around, because obviously this is fresh ears listening to this. I know we've discussed it before, but if you'd like to tell the little bit of story about what we talked the other day, which I think was a great point about the Newcastle fan, if you remember. When they asked him in regards, you know, what do you think of the Saudis taking over? Can you remember that?
Yeah. And he was probably bit like myself, guy in his 50s. Been going to St. James's Park since the year dot and seeing lots of highs and lows, comings and goings. And it was, unfortunately, it was a reporter that had been sent up from Sky News headquarters. So it wasn't a local-based Sky reporter doing the interview. And he asked him about why wasn't there more of a backlash from the Newcastle fans towards the Saudi Arabian state being involved with its human rights record. And the Newcastle fan quite rightly said, why is it you journos always put the responsibility, that moral responsibility, onto us fans? He So because we're the only ones that actually, at the end of the day, don't have any say in the decision-making process. The Premier League, when they were doing their review on the potential takeover, they didn't ask the Newcastle fans what they thought. When Amanda Staveley and her consortium first went to Mike Ashley to make a proposition to buy the club, they didn't go and talk to the fans. Yet the fans are the ones that are expected to somehow be the moral compass of what's good and bad. Nobody asked them if they wanted Mike Ashley. And the Newcastle fan was very clear on that. Nobody spoke to the fans and said, do you want Mike Ashley to buy the club? So why would they come and ask them about the Saudis and then expect there to be this kind of, you know,
rebellion?
Yeah, rebellion, moral outrage. And it is unfair because they don't have a fucking say, pardon my language.
It's all right, don't worry about it. We've heard worse. It's, and the funny thing is, you look at this and you hear about, you know, the Saudis and everything, how they should be. Can you remember Leeds as well, before Bielsa? They used to have a manager every single 6 months. And everyone was going, you know, he's destroying the soul of the club. And I know it's not on the same basis or anything, but if you're a Leeds United fan, you'd be like, I'm getting sick of this. You know, we're having all these managers non-stop. My club's turning into an actual joke. A bit like Watford currently as well. You know, and what are the fans supposed to do in regard of that? You know, if I'm a Watford fan now, what would you do? Stop going to the game, stop supporting them?
Well, they're not the same case, though, are they?
No.
If you're a Watford fan, your issue isn't over the owner's human rights record, because that's not an issue.
Yeah.
It's purely over how you currently run the club. What is your vision? Why is there this high turnover of managers? Why isn't there more stability? And maybe if they had more stability manager-wise, they'd be more of a stable Premier League club instead of this yo-yo, bit too good for the Championship, but not good enough to survive in the Premier League. Mm. That's a different issue from the Saudi involvement at Newcastle. But again, it's always, whether it's bad owners or owners with human rights records of abuses, fans, nobody cares. You've got no say in it.
Well, they've had such a bad time. I mean, if anyone's going to do it, and not only just that, I mean, you have a look at the, you know, this ethical Premier League takeover. I've never known something. And mine alone, by the way, can we just point out that it only took so long, not because of the journalist being murdered or, you know, in regarding of, well, alleged, whatever. Well, I say allegedly, I believe it was actually found out to be that he was murdered. However, it wasn't anything about that at all. It was about, this is so stupid, it is about the actual sports rights of the Premier League in Qatar. And they paid him £1 billion, and then it goes through.
Well, it was that, and the fact they wanted, the Premier League wanted some kind of
letter,
written reassurance.
Written letter saying, no, not me.
Yeah, saying that effectively the Saudi government, state, call it what you will, wasn't involved in the PR side.
But it is. Deal. Isn't it?
Well, it's one of those new points, because it's a legal, you know, grey area, muddled by ambiguity and making it deliberately vague, that although the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia is the chairman of the PIF, he isn't actually involved in the PIF, so...
It'll be like the monarchy taking over and saying, honestly, the Queen's got nothing to do with it.
Well, again, that's not football's problem. It isn't a problem that I think's solely a footballing problem. That's, again, a bigger, wider issue of, you know, business law, business rules that are so grey and shaded. It allows these things to happen. The trouble is, we as football fans, we don't hear about when it's just another company that's not football related that's bought up assets for it, sold off the huge profits, people put onto the dole, made redundant, no redundancy pay. You know, we don't get cross about that because we don't hear about it so often.
No. The only time that kind of really went over was Bury, wasn't it? Berry, Bury, whatever you want to call them. When he even admitted that he had no idea about a football club, but he asset stripped. And then you look at it and you think he did it 40, 50 companies prior. And you're thinking,
the thing was, it wasn't so much that he didn't know anything about football or running a football club. He wasn't interested in the football or the footballing club, because to him, they could have been, you know, making baked bean tins for all he cared. It was a business he bought at a knockdown price, and he just saw an opportunity to asset strip, which he, you know, if you're into that kind of thing, he did a really good job, made himself a fortune. But at what cost? Not just to, again, it's not just the football fans, it's how it hits that local community. Because it's an old-fashioned ground in the middle of an old-fashioned working-class northern area where the football club genuinely is the heartbeat of the town and the town centre. You know, pubs are open because football supporters go to pubs, cafes, bars, hotels, B&Bs, whatever it is. It's a boon to the wider economy. And once that club shut in Bury, that was it.
Such a diverse difference, isn't it?
So again, you know, should there be a better fit and proper persons test at Premier League and EFL level to stop vultures like him? Yes, but it's very, very difficult to do that within the wider law.
Yeah. I think it's the law that needs to change. Like you said, it's not about football law, it's about business law, isn't it? You know.
But they both need to change. You know, there are things that the Premier League and the EFL can do better. And, you know, again, like not allowing owners to separate the ground from the club.
Which we should know at Derby.
Nothing to do with, you know, nothing in business law stopping them
doing that.
Putting a stop to that now. They could stop that straight away with a stroke of a pen. And as football fans, we'd all applaud it because we don't want to see that.
It's funny you say that, right? And we're talking about, because I was thinking, in the EFLs, you know, apparently whoever is in charge of this proper fit, you know, test and everything, and you look at it and you're thinking, well, you know, redo the whole thing, it must take absolutely ages, you know, with business law and everything. And then in the same breath, when Newcastle did get takeover, the first thing they did is have a massive meeting. 18 clubs banned the use of sponsorship that are related to the club to stop putting investment in. So if you're the Saudis, investment fund, you can't be Saudi Airways and put a 300 million sponsorship deal that's obviously overinflated now, which we saw City do, by the way, guys. But you can't do that currently. That's only a short-term one. But I think, how quickly did that get slammed through? That was literally the same week that they got took over. So it can be done, you know, if everybody wants to go. But that unfair advantage, it's going to happen. Newcastle will come up, if we like it or not. But we were just saying before, weren't we, that the massive, massive, massive potential of Newcastle, the whole of the north, from the Midlands upwards, is full of supporters. They probably won't even need a sponsorship. There'll be that many kids growing up with a Newcastle top. You see now with City tops, it's going to be a whole new generation, you know.
Well, again, it's one of those old-fashioned northern working-class cities that we meet, that being a wanting city.
Mm.
You know, most of the same sort of size in the Midlands North area. You know, they've got two, some have got three clubs. You go round the whole of the North West, around Manchester, Liverpool, you know, there's more clubs than just about anywhere else.
Yeah. Yeah, especially in Manchester. I think it's, isn't there like 15 or 16?
Well, you've got two main city, Manchester City based teams. You've got two main Liverpool City based teams.
Yeah.
And then Newcastle's unique like that for the size it is to have one team, and whoever gets it right, be the owners, managers, players, you really are onto something.
And with that money as well, like City have done, like Leicester, they will pump a lot of money in into that community.
Yes, they will. But it isn't about how much they're going to pump in, it's about how they spend their money.
Mm. Yeah.
So it isn't enough to assume that because they can outspend everybody else, that's a guarantee of success. Because it isn't if you're making really poor decisions on and off the field.
Mm.
So I'm sure Amanda Staveley is one of the smartest business people around. From what I've read about her, heard about her, you know, she's a smart individual when it comes to business deals, closing deals, putting consortiums together, pulling strings to make the deal happen.
Didn't she do the City one as well?
Yeah, she was a broker in the City deal. But again, what does she actually know in terms of professional, elite, top level football clubs, what it takes to build a successful team? I don't know. She probably knows as much as me, which is, to be honest, diddly squat, you know, the basics. So again, who's going to be the top football decision maker alongside the Suits? Who's coming in as the director of football or sporting director? What's their background? And again, that will decide the biggest choice of all, I think, who's the manager going to be. Because it's all right going, we're going to give the new manager $150 million to spend in January transfer window. Mick McCarthy's just been sacked by Cardiff. If you're a Newcastle fan, you would not want it to be Mick McCarthy that's being given £150 million, would you?
Well, Steve Bruce was given £160 million.
Well, not in one go, he wasn't.
No, well, of course he wasn't, but you know what I mean.
So again, if they make the smart decisions, get those right, so good sport.
Well, you said it right.
Good manager,
yeah,
brings in a trusted, known backroom team of coaches who can coach however the manager, the club, the owners, whatever their vision is. How do you want the team to play? Because it will reflect your ambition. So if it's safety, well, keeps in the Premier League. Anything else is a bonus. Well, doesn't show much of your sporting ambition, really, does it?
No. Well, you were saying before, even, that the biggest signing City did wasn't the players. It wasn't your Wayne Bridges and everyone to keep them up. It was actually nicking the best sporting directors from Barca.
Well, they got the two most influential behind-the-scenes Suits at Barcelona that they could get City, and one was the sporting director, and I can't remember what the other one's fancy title.
It was like Taxidermy or something like that. It's a genius kit, genius guy, absolutely amazing.
And again, smart moves by their owners who own Man City. And I said, right, now we own the club. Now we need people with the right expertise to advise us. Go get those two guys.
Yeah. Yeah, 100% agree. I mean, with Newcastle, they'll obviously do that. But I think everyone else is going to do the same thing, aren't they? They're going to slowly bring up. It's not going to be like everyone else says, we're going to buy Mbappe, we're going to buy Haaland. Because what they're going into, Haaland with who? You know, John Joe Shelby and Mbappe. it's not going to happen, is it? Let's be honest.
No.
Tonight's thinking.
Anybody who thinks the like of a Haaland, an Mbappe, or whoever else is going to come to Newcastle right now, they're wrong. Because nobody knows yet if they're even going to stay in the Premier League this season. So no one's going to jump ship for a team that, you know, could be playing in the Championship next season.
I mean,
so it's going to be at least.
I've heard names like Coutinho going around. I'm just like, it's just not going to happen. It's just not.
Well, it'll be a sign of their true intentions, because if they just, you know, let's say for the sake of argument, Coutinho goes, you know, or it would take £600,000 a week for them to even consider coming, and they go, okay, we'll give you £650,000. They think they can buy the long-term success they claim to be looking for, ill-fated from the start.
Well, QPR did it. Not on the same level, but they tried it and it just didn't work. You know.
Well, it's rare that it does work.
Yeah, it is rare. And City didn't do it, nor Chelsea did. I know people think they did, but they didn't. They built up very slowly. Didn't they? So, I mean, you look
I remember Noel Gallagher talking about once he got to know the owners at Man City, and they got their hands on it and they went to the training complex. The owners couldn't believe how bad it was.
Oh, really?
They were quite shocked. And that was one of the very first things they identified would be put in art. And it wasn't a case of, you know, we chuck a few quid up to repaint it and put a new this, that, and that. No. They then made a project out of it. So they went all around the world to all sorts of different sporting clubs and, you know, NFL, baseball, and this, that, and the other. And they took all the best bits they liked, covering all the areas of the back rooms, you know, nutrition, sports science, and everything else, and they put it all together under, you know, a multi-million
umbrella,
state-of-the-art complex, where, again, it was big enough so that every single youth group, men, women, boys, girls, all the way down to the very youngest age groups, all trained at the same place, in the same facilities, with the same ethos, and every coach of every age group reported directly or indirectly to the manager, and the manager dictated how all those coaches coached their players.
Well, I remember you saying to me before, going, under-21s game, wasn't it? And a hooded guy appeared at the sideline, the manager, and they realised that this under-21 game, they went up to the sideline, see it was. It was only Clark watching his under-21s.
Yeah.
I remember you telling me that. And you're just thinking, that's what it is now, isn't it? You know, it's not, because I remember, which everyone else hopefully will, you know, apart from Hatch's in, apart from the new generation who'll be listening. But each team used to play differently, and I know that sounds ridiculous, but it was true. You're under 19s, and that's why we're
I'm a little bit an old fogey to remember life before the Premier League. And I can guarantee you that you almost never, ever saw a teenager or a lad in his early 20s getting a debut at a top club. Very rarely. And the chances were, unless he was, you know, top rated, it was rare that he came through their own academy. He's usually somebody they've gone out and spent a lot of money on to get this younger, coming player. And the academy side, it was just a cattle market.
Well, you saw the attitude, didn't you? Your kids won't win anything in 92. Because that was the attitude. You have kids, you don't win.
Well, again, it's how do you prove you're good enough if you don't get an opportunity? If you don't see a clear pathway to that first team, because you think, well, it doesn't matter how good I am, the owners are always going to go out and spend, you know, a massive amount of money on a perhaps a foreign player, I've got no chance. Those days
are
longer.
I think you've raised a very good point. Yeah, you have, because what else people will be saying, Newcastle can compete in 2-3 years. That took City nearly 4 to 5 years to get the training complex, build it all up, for everyone to get up. And people don't remember, it was Mark Hughes, then it was Mancini, and then it was Pellegrini, then it was Pep. And people don't realize how long that took, you know. And we've talked 1,000 times about it. When we first started talking, how I used to say Pep was only good with getting players and, you know, going to these clubs and they've all got loads of money and that's the only way you can manage. And you was, no, it's just so unfair to say.
Well, either it, let's say for just 1 second that that is true, that that assessment of them is true, that's all he can do. That in itself is a very, very good skill to have.
But it's a great trait, isn't it?
And it means, yes, you can have your pick of top rich clubs with the very best players, but then to actually manage all those egos, all those superstars.
Yeah.
And make them successful year after year, trophy winning everywhere you look. That, you know,
you can dismiss that. All managers can't do it. Poch last season, Poch, great manager, couldn't do it. PSG though last season, I mean, he's having a bit of a different season so far, but you look at all them star names and you're thinking, you can't win it. The, just doing the egos alone is just such man management. Can't imagine Steve Bruce, could you, going to PSG and going, go on then, off you pop.
No.
Just
and again, Amanda Staveley, when, you know, she was doing her first proper tour of the ground and everything else, and they went to the training ground and it was, you know, it was a car crash. Because they could not believe how old, shabby, outdated, tatty,
yeah,
everything is. You know, like, it's Newcastle United.
Well, we've talked about this many times again, but we were talking about the difference between even now, because you've been there as well, because obviously you're from Ipswich, and you've seen what happens with old clubs and everything.
Can I just clarify, I'm not from Ipswich.
You know what I meant.
I have to live in Ipswich.
You happen to live there, unfortunately. But even stuff like that, I mean, you look at that and you see it on TV, the ground, just a lick of paint, a bit of... That's all the fans want. They want people to go to the ground and stadium where there's not weeds coming through the stands, you know. And you look at... And I went past Pride Park the other day, the default stadium ground, where there's no redeeming features at all. But it just looks tired and worn out. And, there's, you know, you look at all the metal bars at the top and all rusting and... There's all rubbish around the sides and stuff, and just someone to go around cleaning all the seats and everything, and, you know, getting rid of all the old stuff and everything. I think I was saying to you, they're Philip Coco up all season, just the posters. You know, just little silly things like that, and you're thinking, well, the irony, it's called Pride Park, and you can't do that. And I'm not talking about championship level, I'm talking about the Prem. Have you seen Old Trafford recently?
That's
not great. You know, that when I was growing up, that used to be the big proper stadium that was above its time in fans. I can remember going in, there was a little room that Eric Cantona brought up, you know, with a, you say your star player would go in and do all the skills and everything before a match and everything. But now you look at it and you just think,
oh, it's definitely not as shiny and pretty as your stadium.
Well, we've got a very shiny, pretty stadium up at Spurs. Very shiny. It is a beautiful, grand stadium. It's a shame that we haven't got the team to match it. But hopefully it will come. I think we're very stuck in the rut of getting to that Champions League final. And how many times do you always have to say, you have to push on from that? And we just didn't. We just didn't. You know, like you said, signing that one or two bad signings, like Sergio Aurier, Davinson Sanchez, keeping Eric Dier, you know, because...
Well, again, the questions are all bigger than, you know, who's playing in what position, who's in the squad, who's the manager. It's, what's the ambition of your owners? What's your sporting ambition? Now you've built this fantastic state-of-the-art, all reputation stadium. What then? What's your actual ambition for the sporting side? Tottenham. And I'm not sure they know what it is.
No. I've got a great question for you. Okay. So, we all, no matter what fans say it, we all romance and everything about your squad. So, Spurs are a really great example of that. We had that first 11 in the Champions League and we stayed with it. It's even too long. We didn't add to it. We just let it go. But I see the difference in Liverpool doing that. And whilst people complain, which I never get, that they're complaining that Liverpool don't sign major stars, and Klopp brings in, and he'll get one. But you know, he got Jota, for instance. But they just complain that they don't sign mega stars. But he does. He signed Thiago, you know, Jota, just one or two. But yet Liverpool is still competing, while you see other, you know, teams, and they can do the same thing, but they decline a heck of a lot more. Do you think he was, you know, he clearly knows what he's doing, you know? When you look at someone at Chelsea, on the other hand, who, you know, they have non-stop, and sometimes it works for them and sometimes it doesn't. Which do you reckon is the best way?
I
don't know. I know it's a hard, hard question.
I think it's when you're partisan and tribal, we often as football fans get lazy when we're looking at and criticising and talking about other clubs. Do you understand what I mean?
If I look at Arsenal.
And we use a lot of generalisms, we generalise about this, that and the other, and we often let that get in the way of our sort of rational thinking. I do it all the time, and it is hard sometimes to look at your competitors and sort of give an honest assessment of what you think. But again, my honest assessment of Spurs is that talking about whether, you know, oh, should we have sold Harry Kane, you know, were we right to, it's kind of beyond that now.
Yeah.
It's about what does Mr. Levy and his suited friends really want football-wise for Spurs. Come out and, you know, tell people. And if you're genuine about wanting to bring success, you know, repeat success, winning league titles, it's not a shock if you win the Champions League, because you can't use, if you genuinely want that, then at some point Mr. Levy has to go and need to change my mindset to achieve that, because keep doing what we've been doing, well, you're going to get the same results, aren't you?
Well, do you know, it's a weird one with Levy, because I look at him and I think, I understand what he says when he goes, my job is the Tottenham, obviously, chairman, is to keep the future of Tottenham stable. We haven't got as much money as the other clubs. And you look at it and you think, well, we have, really. I know we've built a stadium for everyone to start, and it's cost, obviously, billions or whatever. However, you look at someone like Arsenal, who hasn't got any, you know, well...
Well, straight away, I'll tell you, Mr. Levy's wrong. Because all he needs to go is, my only concern as chairman of Spurs is to make them successful.
That's not it, though.
That's it.
Yeah,
and if
that's
you get the sporting success bit right, it brings its own financial rewards. Riches beyond even his flipping dreams of income.
I think he's doing the opposite way around. I'm telling you now, I've heard him even say it, going, my job is to keep the financial burning off, you know, Spurs going. And like you said, it should have been totally the opposite way around. That's what Leicester did.
And look, the two are hand in hand. And then no one's saying go bankrupt the club to try and achieve success. I mean, yes, of course, you know, pat on the back, you've run a very financial, stable, well-run club that's made profits, you know, managed to build that fantastic stadium. You have invested in the squad, but if all you want to do is just keep it, you know, I'll keep it ticking over until it's not my
time. Well, that's what we are doing, let's be honest.
Well, move over and let somebody else take the reins then.
Yeah, well, that's what I think he's doing with this new sporting director, because you look at it, and I'm just thinking, when's the last time, apart from Ndombele, that Spurs have gone out and got a, you know, a so-called big name. It's always been Harry Kane through, you know, the youth academy, and Dele Alli from MK Dons, and Reguilon will give you, you know, half a goat now, and you know, can Dele we give Alli? You a fiver a week?
Oh, I remember him.
Yeah, well, check his head. He's got committed. Well, no, I don't know. I think he's an underwear model now. But do you know what I mean? It's great. You look at all the star players within Spurs, and it's all just done on the cheap. And it's so infuriating because it goes, we need to get, and I know we won't compete, but, you know, going things like, well, we won't compete doing this. Even Højbjerg, you know, will give you Kyle Walker-Peters and, you know, a packet of Quavers or something, you know, if you swap him. It's just always wheeling and dealing all the time instead of going, we do it with, if we want to sell a player, we literally, that's why we always go for the very, very maximum price, like we did with Bale. And then, you know, we'll keep going. Well, you know, we're bigger here. We're in the negotiating position, and we'll get the maximum money. Then you think, well, great, that's a great idea, Daniel. However, you've only got 2 days now to get a replacement because you want to get every single penny. Oh, don't worry about that. We've got all the money. We'll wait till the next transfer window. And that's what Spurs is, isn't it? We just wait for the next window and the next window and then the next window.
Well, again, there's no top level sporting ambition, so then there's no plan to come
up. I was just about to say that. You got it right with us when you go, do you know what? I can't see with Spurs. And I go, what's that stuff? And you went, a plan. There's not a plan at Spurs. And I think, there isn't, is there? There isn't one.
Well, no. And again, obviously, I'm going to go back to when Jurgen Klopp came to Liverpool. And he actually spoke about sitting down with the owners, sporting director, chief executive, and going, okay, what are you looking, why are you looking to me to manage this club? What are you expecting me to deliver? What is your idea of success and failure? You know, before you even agreed to take the job.
Milo, he just come from a very successful Dortmund team who, you know, got rid of the Bayern monopoly as well. And he got rid of them because, essentially, Milo Klopp did leave because he was saying, you can't keep selling my superstars and not replacing them, you know.
Well, one of the things you need to do, if you're genuine about the sporting success, I mean, the football inside, is I'm not saying you have to do everything the manager says. But you have to listen to him about what is your plan, and, you know, where do you want me to take the club in 5 years?
Do you think they do that with Arteta and Ollie? You think they listen to them? Because I don't. I obviously we're not there, but and I know you can't just think, well, they obviously listen to them. You know, they obviously listen to Klopp and Pep because they're doing well. Do you think other managers have that kind of same input?
I don't know if every manager does. You just have better, I think, clearly they have. Because one of the things that we, you know, I've heard him speak about it publicly is that, again, it was kind of like time for a complete change at Arsenal. It was more than just about, you know, should he be the manager, and should they sell Aubameyang or keep? It's kind of beyond that. It's, you know, again, getting back to the grassroots of what Arsenal were good at. And again, never got the credit he deserved at the beginning, but when Wenger came in, these were all the things he was doing. So he was bringing everything together. So he was saying to him, no. All your coaches, doesn't matter if it's the under-9s or the senior squad, coach the same mentality, same style of play. So then all your strikers at every age group are all being taught the same way. So that when they progress, it's a seamless, what you're looking for is a seamless transition. Because you're used to it. There's nothing new about it in terms of what's expected of you. So if you're 13-year-old and you're a defender, you're going to be learning the stuff the seniors are doing, the basics, the good things that they want me to do. And all these things.
Billy Gilmore, like we've seen that before, weren't we? Is it Jack O'Connor? Billy Gilmore? There's so many.
Conor Gallagher.
Yeah, Conor Gallagher, sorry. And that's just the Chelsea lot, you know. Then you look at Saka and everything going up and as well. And, you know, there's just so many examples now. Like you're saying, from the difference from when, you know, growing up till now, you can literally be an 18-year-old and make your Prem debut and actually have a very long career. Some of the best players in the world now are probably around 21.
Well, Harvey Elliott, you know.
Great, yeah. I hope he's all right. Do you know any more about him at the moment?
It's just that, you know, that racing game. I never thought there'd be any danger of him playing certainly before the new year. I'll be surprised if he plays till next season.
Exactly.
But again, you know, go back to what some people like to call the good old days. You just would never have seen him making any kind of debut, even a Carlin Cup bloody game. He just wouldn't have happened at his age.
So we've got about 15 minutes left anyway. So, just quickly, I think we talked about this the other day, right? If you get bored, guys, right, watch. They have them on ITV, don't they, Sub? The big match revisited, is it?
Yeah.
And I promise you, excuse you, dog, I promise you now, it is like MMA, isn't it? It is proper two-footed.
Well, I grew up watching football as a 10, 11-year-old in those good old days. And there was nothing good about the physical stadiums. They were shitholes. You'd go to the toilets at half time and you'd be wading in water and other things.
Yeah.
You know, nobody cared whether the burger lady got a health and hygiene certificate.
Doris.
Because we were only football fans, why spend money on nice facilities? Yeah, okay, which we kind of got. Pitches, terrible, awful. You see some of the games that are staged over the winter period, they are mud baths.
Well, can't you remember that goal? Was it Tim Flowers when the ball goes over him because of the bumps?
Well, that's even, you know, that's early sort of Premier League time, Tim Flowers. But, you know, before the Premier League and the real investment in facilities, stadiums, players, managers, from TV deals. It's a whole new fucking sport now. It's just nothing like what it was back then. And most of it, generally, is for the better. Because
it looks like Sunday League football. It really does, doesn't it? Even the way that the play looks like Sunday League football with the long balls and everything.
Well, I'm privileged to be able to see so many talented footballers at so many different clubs from all around the world. Players from countries that, again, back in the good old days, they never produced any footballers. There was no route out. Even if you were a good footballer, particularly in some of the African countries. But now, thank God, that's changed.
Yeah.
And changed for the better. And we're privileged to see these players, these young players that make their debuts and just look like, well, he's been around forever, and they fit straight in.
Yeah, well, they do, don't they?
Great world-class managers coming again, all from around the world, to come and manage in England.
And
their families with them.
You said it right as well the other day, which... like the fourth time I said that, but in regard of the whole he got the ball first rules gone now.
Yeah.
You know, you can't go around breaking someone's legs and going, he's got the ball first.
It wears me out when I hear people, even one of the pundits, going, oh, he got the ball first. And I'm like, do you know, it's just so irrelevant about whether you got the ball or not. Just, it's not important. we don't want to see, we don't need to see really bad rash tackles that are done out of either desperation or because you're passionate about your team or any of that crap. No, you went to any other job and crippled one of your workmates. Well, you would, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
You wouldn't expect people to just go, oh, it doesn't matter, he's just passionate, he is, or he just...
He got to the till first. But yeah, but he broke his hand, but he got to it first, it's all right.
No, and I know it happens for, you know, unintentional reasons, you know, that's life. I'm not suggesting players go in wanting to cripple people. But the idea that because you got the ball first excuses you from any moral responsibility for, you know, you broke somebody's leg and they ain't going to be able to play for the next 12 months. No, that's...
I just think on the top of my head, you know, we had obviously, like you've just said, Harvey Elliott. We had, I can't remember who Son injured though, but you know, then you had obviously Shaw's leg break as well. Seen quite a few really, really, really big injuries. I mean, not about like one or two, not about leg breakers, you know.
Remember, my mate stopped going to his 10-year-old son's football games because of the parents, on mainly men, stood on the sidelines, you know. But get stuck here, get, you know, all that old nonsense. Get stuck here, it's not that darling. We're talking about the game of football. Go out, have fun, do your best, but enjoy it.
Well,
you're not there to go and pretend, get stuck in. God.
You know,
tactical genius, get stuck in.
It's hard. I tell you what, it's a far too long conversation now, but in regard of racism in football, and the thing is, just a quick note of it, I noticed for the England incident, we've got to play our next international game behind doors. That was an audition, by the way, you guys. You know, for the next Euros or World Cup, when obviously we had it in the final, and I'll tell you something, we ruined that, and we ruined that hard. The whole, you know, invading and people getting beat off and stuff, and you know, the cameras, and it didn't look good for us. And you know, you can look at Eastern European countries and say that, you know, they do the chants and everything and they get a ban and they don't care either, but we care a lot, you know. And I just think, I don't know if
I think we need to be really, really careful. If we're English people, England football fans of English football clubs, that we don't get blinkered by this. Somehow it's only a foreign problem of racist or hateful abuse coming from the crowd towards players for whatever reason, homophobic, racist, religion-based. You know, it isn't a purely foreign problem. It's as much an English problem, and always has been in football. Football and racism, you know, it's been there way before even I started watching football back in the late 70s, early 80s. So we do have to be very careful. We can't absolve ourselves.
Purely English, isn't it, that we let the world and we just don't look at ourselves first. But you know, it's one of them things where I don't know where the issue is. I don't know if it's the parents, I don't know if it's the club.
Well, again, again, as you quite rightly said, it's for another time, but again, it isn't a football only problem. You're talking about rise of racism, far right, hate. It's on the rise, bit bigger than before, probably because of things like the internet. So whereas before it would be quite difficult for you to find the address and send hate mail to a player that you wanted to abuse, to abuse him. But now all you got to do is find out what's his where it what has contacts on Facebook or whatever it is, Instagram, yep. And you can send in immediate abuse.
Totally. When I was a kid, you know, if someone's getting bullied at school, it just stopped at school, but now it follows them home. Same with football players. If you don't have a good game on Saturday one Saturday afternoon, then, you know, you're getting it. Then you, that person doesn't like it. They will bombard you day and night.
But then what we've lost is this, you know, it's fine to be critical of players.
Of course it is.
It's fine.
You still criticise players. Of course you can.
To doubt their ability, you know, I don't think he's particularly good. Well, that's a judgment. That's fine. But once, you know, he's had a bad game, so therefore it gives me the right to just be hateful and abusive to him. That's the bit that has to change, you know, and whether that's through education or better laws or whatever it is. But again, it's a society-wide problem. It's not just football's problem.
Going to, just to lighten it up now, guys, sorry about that. Because again, that's a massive conversation and it can't even probably be done over an hour. Okay. But we'll give it a good try. But we'll save that.
Is this like the local news? We've done the serious stuff. Now we're going to that.
Now for you. Now for the weather.
Exactly.
16 people have been murdered by a rampaging goat. However, look at this 4-year-old's colourful drawing.
Of a rainbow. I see what we're going for here.
I'm going to say some players to you. Right, and we're going to do full circle now. Right, last 5 minutes. Yep,
said that.
And I want you to say if this is going to be a good possibility or no. Okay, right, Newcastle signings. It's a possibility. You ready?
Right,
Paul Pogba, end of contract.
No.
Lewandowski.
No.
Okay. Oscar.
No.
You're getting some big no's here. Adebayor. He used to be. I think he's still playing.
No.
What about Zaha? I think that would be a very good signing. Not only a very good signing, it would build them up, but, you know, quite a lot of possibilities in there.
Possible. I guess if you're a Newcastle fan, you'd be happy to see him come. Because, again, it's that thing of, is the guy we're signing
better than what we've got
already? And if, you know, everybody's convinced the answer is yes, then it looks good on paper, doesn't it?
Yeah. Right, Antonio. Possibly.
Yeah, possibly. Yeah.
I said this to my mate, and he said Antonio would never leave West Ham, and I'm thinking, well, you know, we'll see. You know, I think it's not as clear as that. You know. But yeah, no, Antonio. Dele Alli.
You are funny.
Yeah, hey, if I'm Newcastle, you never know.
They're not. No, trust me, they're not going to come and dig your lot out of the hole you've got yourselves in the bit.
Well, wishful thinking. One matter.
Pardon?
Matter.
Because he could have like what I call the Gary McAllister.
Yeah, the Gary McAllister effect. What do you reckon to that? Aubameyang.
Wow, that's difficult. Because it's not. Well, I've got to be careful here. It's not. I don't rate Aubameyang. You can't do what he's done at the clubs that he has and not be good. I'm just not totally convinced he's in that sort of top bracket.
Ooh, we're going to get a lot of hate for that. What, okay, what about Lacazette?
No, it'd only be from Arsenal fans, and they'd be able to write any letters.
Direct all haters up. Lacazette. I think Lacazette would be great at Newcastle.
Again, Arsenal fans, but I'd say the same about Lacazette. Not saying he isn't good. I don't know if he's, you know.
Better than Callum Wilson? What about Joshua King? I think is he at Watford now? He's somewhere like that.
I can't remember, yes. I can't remember, to be honest. I know he left Everton, but he didn't get game time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right, two more. You ready? Alan from Everton.
Yes.
Yep. And last one. You ready? Connor Cody. Or even Adama Traore. Do you know someone like that?
Well, hold on. Let's not, you know. Let's stick with Connor Cody. Yes. Is he better than what they've got? Yes. Would he improve their defence? Yes.
Where do you want to go?
Is he a spectacular high profile signing? No. But if you want a solid, reliable
guy,
defender with experience who can play football as well, they could do a lot worse.
Yeah, well, I was just thinking then when I said Adama Traore, I thought Ruben Diaz. Ruben Neves.
Well, again, yeah, I think that's probably the route we'll see.
I hope so.
Castle go down, where instead of, you know, oh, we've gone out and splashed 90 million on him and
100
million on him, you know, they'll probably look to what the average spend per position. So if it's been 20, 30 million under Mike Ashley per position, they'll go, okay, let's make it 50, 60.
Yeah.
And kind of build it that way.
Well, I've got a random stat for you. Okay. Due to financial fair play and over the minimum amount they've spent, you know, for this window, they've got between 200 and 300 million to spend in January, apparently. Yes. And I'm thinking, why would you get two £90 million players like you've just said when you can get 450? Or, you know, £450 million, depending on which figure.
Well, it can be a brilliant indicator. They've got £300 million. It's a January transfer window. And generally, yes, I know there are exceptions, you tend not to get best value for money in a January transfer window. So, again, not look at what they spend and where it's spent will give us a sort of key indicator what they're thinking is.
Right, so, well, thank you very much for joining me, my friend.
No, you're welcome.
It's
the checks in the post, did you say?
Well, I'll tell you something, mate. There'll be something, but I don't think it'll be from Arsenal fans. I don't think it'll be a letter of gratitude.
Well, that's all right. They don't know where I live, so.
Well, I don't know, guys. Message me, I'll tell you. On that note, though, guys, thank you very much for joining us. And, we'll see you next time, guys. Take care. Thank you again, Tom.
You're welcome. Have a good one.
Hi, guys. It's Will from TN Bull. And before we start this podcast, I just want to make a massive shout out to BK Accountants. They're an easy way to complete your tax returns. So let me explain. Okay, they offer accountancy services suitable for absolutely everybody. They're a proactive and friendly service. They're open 24/7. And most importantly, they guarantee to be 25% cheaper than your current accountant or anybody else who is doing your accounts. Don't take mine and Jay's word for it, however. You can find them at www.bkaccountants.org.uk, or if you want to send an inquiry off, you can email accounts@bkaccountants.org.uk. Thanks for listening, and let's get into the podcast.